Did you think your plans were secret when you left your office last night? You closed the door behind you. Were you walking in your sleep or were you just too tired to notice all the watchful eyes upon you? There's the man who does the maintenance and the maid who cleans the carpets in the hall. And the guard down in the lobby through a hidden TV camera saw it all. This little birdie told me who was talking to a fly upon the wall. So when you think nobody's looking, I'm the eye that passes by you. When you think nobody's listening, I'm the listener. I'm the resistor. Might even be your butler or your chauffeur who just opened your car door. I'm the butcher, I'm the baker, I'm your future troublemaker. I'm the guy that used to date your little sister. I'm the resistor. Spin your little stories till nobody will believe you anymore. And you can plot your deadly schemes and say it isn't what it means, but let me tell you what it means. This means war.
Yeah, I'm the resistor. Terrible topic. I'm the insurgent, baby. Not just the resistor. Yeah, we've become the insurgent. Terrible Tommy here in the bunker right here in north central Indiana on another beautiful, beautiful day. That's right, sunshiny and real nice. And, this is the 10th of July, 2014. And we're getting about, well, we're partway through the month here. Got all the fireworks out of the way. I'm causing quite a stir around town for putting letters in the paper about you need tax revenue, tax the hell out of fireworks, you know, except for community fireworks. Yeah, and people like that. Everywhere I go around town, they say, right on, man. They even honking going by the house. So Tommy got some positive press. Well, Israel is in flames, or a little bit. Hamas is pounding them with those non-guidance rockets they've got, and which is doing very little damage, incidentally. But it's getting hairy over there. I sent you out a couple of MP3s this morning. I got all off of old Rogue Progressives show there. And unfortunately, the audio is not quite up to par because I did it on my Mac, and I thought I had it on the line in, and I didn't. I had it another way, so it's, but you can understand it. Now, remember, boys and girls, how I talked about the Balfour Declaration? Well, the Balfour Declaration set forth all of this BS. Here the British, obviously, and the French, and the Germans, and the Americans, meddling around on another continent, splitting it, dividing it, dividing tribal lines, pitting one group against the other and all that to get the goodies. It's been going on a long time, but that Balfour Declaration was the craziest damn thing that they ever instituted, because they, right in the middle of the Mideast there, they gave, they ceded Palestine to both the Kikes, the Hebrews, and they gave it to the, I believe it was the Turks or the Ottoman Empire at the time. It was right, I think, at the end of World War I. Now, I know there may be several reasons why they did that at the time, but it was crazy and had to lead to ongoing problems forever until Israel's gone. Because the Arabs aren't going anyplace. The Muslims aren't going anyplace. They're growing like mad. And one of these days, you'll probably see ISIS getting up ahead of steam and heading for Israel. Anyhow, it was a crazy-ass plan put together by the British. They didn't ask the Palestinians to vote on it. They didn't ask any of the other countries to vote on it. They just plopped it down there and said, your big-ass Hebrew God said you could have this piece of property because you say it's been forever and you're right. And so they started putting them over there. And then, of course, you got to admit it, Hitler did more to advance Israel than anybody else. They weren't really growing that fast. They weren't going too fast until Hitler played his games and in a roundabout way or whatever. Maybe that, of course, that was a plan probably in the beginning. And Israel took off, and of course it needed a lot of fertilizer, so we gave it to them. About 3-4 billion. That's just tip of the iceberg, 3-4 billion a year. Mostly in armaments to kick the ass of the Palestinians and the Arabs and keep them in line. A lot of people don't seem to realize they didn't give them 3 billion cash. They traded military equipment. And so anyhow, that's the way that goes. So now it's coming to the head again. Well, it can only come to a head so many times until it goes over the top. Now, here we are with the corporate predatorism inflaming countries all over the world. I mean, you know, we've got crazy-ass Ukraine. Now, we promised the Russians we'd back off with NATO. when they got rid of their Soviet Union. And we promised. And, of course, we didn't do it. Now we're even closer than we were before. So these stooges in Ukraine are being backed by the military-industrial complex in this country. And so they're real bold, and they're going over there and bombing the hell out of it, and burning the hell out of it, and killing all the people, all these people in the eastern part of the country, with the excuse that these ethnic Russians would like representation, possibly even a republic there within the Ukraine. No, no. This billionaire chocolate maker that they illegally put in as president of the Ukraine. Everybody wants to sit down and talk this thing out and figure it out, but he doesn't. No, he refuses every time. Well, as long as he's got big old Keiko Uncle Sam behind him, he feels he can do anything. Well, he's gradually losing the support of the European countries. The European countries are getting really tired of Washington. I mean, really tired. So, I think you're going to see, well, like I said before, the little empire is crumbling. That's Israel. And the big empire is crumbling, too. Let's take the big empire longer. And I'm sorry, we're going to take the blunt for that. You and me gonna have to suffer because of these bastards. Hopefully one day we can make them suffer. Who's them? Well, you can pick up your Fortune 500 and figure it out. Well, me and my main squeeze went to the fair last night, the county fair, and I wish I hadn't. I saw quite a few of my friends out there. I go over to the Republican booth and give them hell. Of course, I laugh it up, you know. Then I go over to the Democrat booth, and I know those guys. I give them hell and then laugh it up. Then I go over to the newspaper, and then I go down to all these religious booths, and I go up to them. I say, look, I want to put a booth in here. It's too late this year, but next year right beside yours. They said, that'd be fine. I said, well, I'm an atheist. I'm the leader of the atheists. And you ought to see their face. They're not used to that around here. They do not know how to reply because they're supposed to, you know, Christians, they got that Stepford wife smile on their face. They always smile at everybody when they think they got another sucker coming along. And they don't know whether to shit or go blind when I say stuff like that. I was going to record a bunch of CDs with that There Is No Jesus and take them out there, but I forgot to do it. I got to remember to keep a stock of about 50 of those around here and just hand them out to young people and some of these preachers just to bug them. So anyhow, I had a good time, but the bad time I had out there, you know, you got to take the bitter with the sweet, my daddy used to tell me. Go out on the midway, and every year you can tell of the percentage of non-whites, mainly mestizos, that have come to town in the last year. You could do a pretty good census based on that. Well, it's getting pretty bad. Now, I was there where the sun was high in the heaven, sunshiny, everything, and that place was crawling with mestizos. Crawling. I would say over one-third of the people on that midway were mestizos of the ugliest kind. Now, I said to my squeeze, I said, can you imagine what it's going to be like after dark? Because the non-whites love after dark on the midway. If you've been to any fair around or anything like that, or amusement park, they always come in, they really like to come in the dark at night. I know, I remember in Southern California, you didn't go down into the riot area after dark. Because they're rioting all the time and shooting each other and everything else. So, Anyhow, I was so depressed. I mean, it's really hard to keep your composure. You know, you want to do something, but you know you can't. There's not really any one thing you can do. So we got out of there, and we were both really upset to look around. And also to see all these white kids, these good-looking white kids running around with mestizos. I saw a beautiful young girl there, a white girl, with her arm around this mulatto. They were hugging and kissing, and that was stuff was going on all over the Midway. So based upon this little Midwest town going this fast, even in the, 8 or 9 years I've been back here, oh man, it's moving so fast. It must be moving this fast in every little town in the country. So we have to admit we've lost the first round terribly. We didn't actually lose it. Because there never was a fight. There was a few of us fighting, few of us trying to do something without being shot down by the cops or going to prison forever. But we're going to have to ride this out. We're going to lose 2 or 3 generations if there's going to be a comeback. There's no doubt about that. And so the idea of stopping this now, it would take Guderian's tank command to stop it now. It would take a real bloodbath to stop it now. So anyhow, that's my report from the Motherhood and Apple Pie. All the Christians around here, they just love these mestizos. Just love them to death. And you don't even see any grumpy looks on their faces. They're just smiling like the Stepford Wives, while all these mestizos are slinking around with these little white girls on their arm. Yeah. And, of course, you see them around town with the, then they evidently get married or live together for a few weeks or a few months, and the gal has a kid, and then the mestizo is gone, just like the niggers. Nigger guys are gone. Anyhow, that's the bad news for today, boys and girls, but you know what's going on. It's not really news going on everywhere in the country. And it's going to get much worse. Much worse before there's any possibility of it getting better. But there are millions of white people out there you cannot save. Don't even try. You cannot save them. They're just too stupid. Well, I've been talking about how you better start worrying about water and forget about the oil for a long time. At least 25 years. So it's slowly catching up. And we've been watching this Lake Mead thing that feeds Las Vegas for a long time. They're trying their best to get a pipeline put across the mountains over across Indian territory, which they're fighting it like hell, and other small towns to get the water from far east of there, of Las Vegas, or northwest, or northeast, or somewhere over there. I forgot where it's at. Drought in the southwestern U.S. will deplete the vast Lake Mead this week to levels not seen since Hoover Dam was completed and the reservoir on the Colorado River was filled in the 30s, federal water managers said on Tuesday. The projected lake level is about 1,080 feet above sea level, will be below the level of about 1,082 feet recorded in November 2010 and the 1,083-foot mark measured in April 1956. During another sustained drought. Now remember, also you've got the Colorado River that's being drained dry by California and Arizona. And it, of course, it has a lot of problems getting water into it anyhow. Plus, there's all kinds of toxic shit that's been dumped in the in the Colorado River from nuclear stuff. You name it, it's been dumped in there. So by the time it gets down to Mexico, they tell me it's just a small creek, if that. So what the hell are you guys going to do in Arizona? What are they going to do in all those states out there? Well, they, you know, I told them get desalinization going years ago when I ran for Congress. And they didn't do anything with it. And also I said you got to get these farmers that are controlled. Now, I'm all for farming, but we're talking about agribusiness now, not family farms, for the most part. That they were using ditches to supply the water, and there was tremendous water waste. And I said, you got to go to trickle irrigation, which you get a tremendous efficiency out of your water. Yeah, hardly any of them did it. They didn't have to do it because none of the legislators would make a law that you got to do it, because the big shot corporation at the banks that control much of agribusiness in this country said, no, we don't want to do that, and we wouldn't make enough money. So now we're going to pay the piper. I wouldn't doubt that you'll see cars with mattresses on them coming back from Arizona and the Southwest one of these days, the same way they left Oklahoma back in the 20s with a mattress on the top of their car. But the land of milk and honey is gone. California's got, they say, 2 years of water, period. I mean, you know, you notice the little reaction of the public to this stuff? I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, they should be panicking with all the problems they've got. They don't, not only aren't they panicking, they're just going along like, somebody will save us. I guess the government's going to save us. The same corporations that destroyed the situation and screwed up the environment. Oh, yeah, they're going to help us out. Oh, jeez. It's unbelievable. So stand by. One of these days you're going to be able to buy a nice house in Las Vegas for pennies on the dollar. They got a housing bubble building out there anyhow. Forget the water. They got a housing bubble. And every once in a while they stick a pin in those bubbles and then they collapse and the big boys make a fortune. And the little people get screwed. So, but the smart people will stick around when they stick that pin in the damn balloon. You move in and buy yourself a cheap house. Now you might have to use a desalinization machine or something for your water, or truck it in, or come on over here and buy one of our big 18-wheeler tanker trucks, Army surplus, and you can tank your water in there, and you can live pretty nice. But now my question is, where's the gambling, the billion-dollar gambling business going? I mean, the multi-billion-dollar people can throw all their money away, the working class. They got to keep it going someplace. Are they going to move it out of Las Vegas? Yeah, they got Atlantic City, but that's not good enough. Then you got all these wagon burner gambling casinos all over the country. But where are the big boys going to go from Las Vegas? I said before, I think we're going to get back into Cuba. I think they're going to say, come on, man. And they're going to move back into Cuba as one of the answers to the Las Vegas problem. See, Washington's kept up this charade for, 40, 50 years now about Castro. They got into it, they got stuck on him like tar baby, and they couldn't get loose, and they don't want to lose face. So they keep it. It's all about losing face about this ridiculous boycott of Cuba, which should have been done away with decades ago. So they're going to wait now. You know, Castro can't last very long. He can't last forever, I guess. And as soon as he bites the dust, they'll get back to normal relations with Cuba, and there go the gambling casinos again. And it won't be that long. The funny part about it is Castro would have made a deal with them decades ago. It was all the crap was mostly on the Washington side about this communist thing. Castro became a so-called, he faked that communist stuff just because he couldn't get any help from anybody that was under capitalist control, so he said he went to the communists to get support. Now, if the capitalists would have been nice to him and recognized his reforms for the poor people of Cuba and gave him a little slack, they'd have got along just fine. But no, they kicked Batista out. He was the crown prince of capitalism in Cuba. We're not going to have any land deals with the peasants or anything like that. Are you kidding? Guaranteed health programs, health insurance? Ha! Are you kidding? We'll boycott that son of a bitch forever. You know, I think I sent out yesterday an article about Sam Bowers in the 60s, White Knights of Mississippi Klan, in the background to Sam Bowers. I don't know whether I told you, but I met with him in the 70s, I believe it was, if not the 80s, at his sister's home in, I think, not too far from Jackson, Mississippi. I liked the guy, I liked Sam Bowers, but he was way too religious for me. He was really a Christian zealot, and nice man, he was a gentleman, southern gentleman, but he was just too much Christ insanity for me. However, I never had any quarrels with him or anything like that. But when I talked to him there, he seemed to have lost a lot of his zeal for the race. He was running to get back into the Republican Party there in Mississippi. And I tried to remind him without offending him too much that the Republican Party or any of these parties were treason to the race. But anyhow, that was my brief association with Sam Bowers. Of course, you probably know about the 2,500 earthquakes in Oklahoma linked to this fracking crap. Not only that, but fouling up millions of gallons of water once it's used in that. They take potable water and shoot it down into the ground at high pressure, and then they take it back up, and it becomes worthless. You couldn't drink it. But there are still people in Oklahoma and some of these towns that are saying, oh, we got to have it. We got to have fracking because we'll lose our job. Well, if you don't have an environment, it won't make any difference if you don't have a job, you stupid idiot. Well, guess who's coming to dinner? Ebola cannot be cured, but West Africa's epidemic may have been preventable. Now remember, all these people from Nigeria and all these countries, Central African Republic and so forth, are traveling to the United States all the time, every day, day in and day out. They're coming into our big airports all around the country. The role of the international community in the current crisis, you see, we have a crisis every 5 minutes, everywhere you look, crisis here, crisis there. The crisis in the Central African Republic, I think there's a lot of Negroes there. And northern Nigeria may be mired in confusion, but it can do something about Ebola epidemic in West Africa. Well, why don't they do something about it themselves? Why don't they have great hospitals built and run by black Africans? Why don't they have black African scientists and great black doctors? Once in a while they do, but not very often. The outbreak of the virus, which started in Guinea and has spread to Liberia and Sierra Leone, is the deadliest in recorded history. Have you heard anybody around your town getting very excited about it? You mention this stuff in casual conversation. What you talking about? With the Médecins Sans Frontières, MSF, and the World Health Organization, WHO, that's a good name for them, WHO, declaring the situation's out of control. But we're not blocking these people from leaving the country and coming to the United States and Europe and England and Britain and all over the world. There are more than 759 cases across 60 sites since the first ones were confirmed in March. That's almost 50 known cases per week and a 20% increase in cases since 23 June. Almost 500 people have died from the disease, and believe me, it's not a pretty death, which is spread across international borders because people travel. Ebola has a fatality rate of up to 90%. Once you have it, your chances of survival may be just 1 in 10. There's no vaccine and no cure. The only way to stop the virus is to prevent it or treat the symptoms, if diagnosed early enough. It is spread by contact with fluids of infected people or animals, such as urine, sweat, and blood. During the rainy season from June to September in West Africa, the spread of bodily fluids is a high risk. Well, I guess you're going to have to prevent these people from travel. I guess you're going to have to put a bamboo wall around their country. Oh, you can't do that because they have a right to travel? Oh, okay. Welcome to America. Bring your Ebola. Yeah, because nobody's going to check you out coming in. Center for Disease Control with the airlines working. Are you kidding? That would slow down things and they'd lose money. They'd lose money. Oh, who's that sick nigger over there in the back of the plane who's sweating and his eyeballs are turning round and round? Oh, I guess he just got a little upset stomach. Yep. It's coming. It's coming, boys and girls. All kinds of new diseases. I had a fellow talk to me yesterday. His daughter's got this disease. Let me see if I've got it here. I don't think I wrote it down. Well, it's called mitochondria. He said his daughter's got it. Mitochondria, which I've never heard of. It's a big, long word. Has something to do with the cells not being able to transfer the benefit of food into the other cells in the body or something like that. Mitochondria. Have you ever heard of it? No, hell. No, it's probably one of those new ones coming in from outside the country. But I didn't hear him railing about all this immigration invasion stuff. No. I don't know. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. Well, back to Ebola. But here is where the international community can help. Well, it's always got to help because blacks can never do anything for themselves. Well, they can have sex. The health systems of West African countries are weak. Well, they've been weak for a million years. Three countries ranked 174, Liberia, 177, Sierra Leone, and 178 in Guinea out of 186 countries for human development, according to the UN Development Program. So one of the world's most deadly viruses is plaguing three of the countries least equipped to cope with it. The blackest countries, as usual. In Sierra Leone, I have been involved in a 2-year research program to prevent malnutrition. This has involved spending time at some of the government-run peripheral health units, PHUs, in northern Sierra Leone on the border with Guinea. Just a minute here. I have to move something. Hold it. The PHUs are the front line of healthcare, assuming, of course, you can reach one of the 1,228 clinics across the country. One community we visited is a 6-kilometer walk. It's about a 4-mile walk from the nearest PHU. When access to state health services is limited, locals often turn to traditional healers who sometimes misdiagnose Ebola and treat it as a curse, and they shake their beads and do their dance. The PHUs are critical in providing immunizations, malaria treatment, delivering more nigger babies, providing free medical care to pregnant and lactating mothers and children under 5. But they're not without serious problems. Staff often lack good quality training, partly because they tend to learn through cascade models where one person might train 10 others, who in turn train 10 more, and so on, operating like a system of Chinese whispers with all the potential miscommunications that can involve. You know that game where you whisper, you sit in a circle and you whisper a secret to your person on your right or your left, and they pass it around, and by the time it comes back, they'll be cutting your foot off when you got a brain tumor. Yeah. There's a high turnover of PHU staff owing to poor working conditions. For example, the nurses earn just $55 per month, roughly $1.80 per day, meaning that new untrained staff are commonly found at the front line of Sierra Leone's healthcare system. Well, you see, the point is, I'm not going to read any longer here because, you know, it's a disaster. I mean, to them, it's a disaster. And it will be a disaster to us if we don't watch out. But you see, the corporations go in there and tear up Africa. Yes, they do. They go in there and steal the oil and pollute the rivers, everything else, like they do in South America. On the one hand, causing situations to arise that make it much worse for these backward Negroes. Much worse than if they would just operate under regular tribal rules and the corporations get out of there. And then on the other hand, they're over here on the other side paying a pittance for ill-trained people to try to treat these people. I mean, it's insane. Or why do you want to give any health care to a continent or to a large portion of a continent who should be allowed to fall under nature's law and either sink or swim? Sorry, that make me feel hard-hearted? No, I don't feel hard-hearted. I feel that if you cannot keep up with the race, you better get a better car or get out. Or a faster horse. My Siberian Husky, Natasha, had to put her 2 cents in there. About this time every day, we have a lady who walks the road here, one of the neighbors. And in a way, it's good because she picks up all the trash along the road that some of our wayward mestizos throw out of their car on their way back to their shantytown. It's about two miles south here, called a trailer park. But it's a ritual for the dogs to go nuts when she walks by. Now, when Ebola first struck Poge, a village deep in Sierra Leone's forested interior region, residents did what they always do when a mysterious illness brings death. They consulted the traditional witch doctor. But the elderly witch doctor and herbalist soon caught one of the world's most contagious diseases and then became a source for spreading it as visitors streamed in. By the time the officials had pinpointed Puget as a hotspot for the disease months later, dozens had died. The people living in those areas said there's no such thing as Ebola, said a district doctor who spoke on condition of anonymity. They have their traditional beliefs and their traditional cures, and they look up to their traditional leaders. Until we can bring the traditional leaders, that's witch doctors, on side, it would be very difficult to convince them that Ebola even exists. Wow, man. As the death toll from the latest outbreak of the world's deadliest virus climbs to 467, far exceeding the previous most lethal outbreak, which killed 254 Negroes. I like the way they always say people. Negroes in the Congo, officials and health workers are battling a surge of infections propelled by misinformation and doubt about the disease's existence spread by the witch doctors on one side and mistrust of scandal hit governments on the other side. That's a big master, big hee-ho nigga down at the Capitol who's draining all the American foreign aid and all that money is going into his bank account, because when he gets overthrown, he's headed for Paris, man. Following a Doctors Without Borders warning that the illness is out of control in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone, West African health ministers on Wednesday began a two-day summit in Ghana's capital of Accra to discuss ways to strengthen regional cooperation. You got to get all the witch doctors together. They got a union, you know. The World Health Organization has also warned for the other West. What good is it to warn them? There's no defense, really, against this Ebola disease. Unless you just go into your room or go into the barn and lock the door. Ivory Coast, Senegal, Mali, Guinea, Bissau to prepare for possible arrival of travelers carrying virus. Yeah, because they're traveling all over the place. And they're coming to New York City, San Francisco, Chicago, New Orleans, man. They likes to travel. And usually they're traveling with money furnished to them by some Christian organization. Yes, that's how so many of these people come to the United States and Europe. They're financed by Christians who are also so well-meaning. Christ insanity. Don't you love it? Actually, it's helping Mother Nature. Mother Nature is going to clean out the crap. Should just back off and let her do her work. But not let them come into the country. But, of course, that's too much to ask. That would be mean and racist. Some government officials have disputed the World Health Organization's statement, saying the increased death toll is a sign of better surveillance. Oh, duh. We're not saying that everything is okay, but there are fewer people dying in silence now, which is a good thing. Yeah, they're screaming, I'm dying. Yeah. So you know they're dying before they died in silence, you know. The more we can identify when and where there are fatalities, the better we can prevent further cases, Health Ministry official Sakuba Keita said from Guinea's capital in Conakry. Wait a minute. This is changing nothing. This helps nothing. I mean, oh, it's unbelievable. It's enough to gag a maggot. Yeah. Now, the next thing you'll see is these workers for these corporations, white people who go down to Africa, and all these white missionaries running around down there trying to make good little baby Jesus lovers out of the niggers, be dragging that shit back to your hometown. I mean, every little town. I mean, you know, you go to any kind of social thing here on the street, street fair or anything, you got Christian white people out there raising money and so forth to send their missionary down there to Africa and hang around those Ebola people. And then come right back to your town, just like germ warfare, man. It's germ warfare. Christianity is germ warfare. It be the virus warfare, man. Now, don't forget, a whole lot, a big percentage of this problem of disease and starvation and all that could be laid at the feet of the corporations running rampant through Africa. And also the situation where Europeans do some phony lines that split tribes up in the whole bit, to where they'll never do great in Africa. But if they were left to their straight, strict tribal ways, and they would die off at a reasonable rate, they'd be okay. If you don't believe me, the corporations are doing all this shit. Let's go to Sanjay in Rakesh, India. Actually, it's a town called Jedagora, a town of 19,500 people, about 850 miles from New Delhi in East India's Jharkhand state. Once ringed by lush tribal forests, Jedagora is today a troubling portrait of modern India. Its outskirts, a postcard of pastel-painted mud houses scattered amid tiny rice fields. Its center, the hub of India's uranium mining industry that is fueling an unprecedented nuclear power boom. It's here that the state-run, right, Uranium Corporation of India Limited is licensed by the Indian government to gouge hundreds of thousands of tons of uranium ore out of the ground each year. While just over the hill, an easy walk from the village, 193 acres of ponds holding the mildly radioactive waste stand largely unguarded, save for no trespassing signs. Oh, do we have a problem here? For years, these desperately poor people lived in scattered villages in the shadow of these mines and have been tormented by a mystery. What's causing the wasting diseases that are deforming, killing so many of their children? Sanjay's 70-year-old grandfather, a bare-chested, barefoot man, rendered lean by hard work and a sparse diet, offers an observation shared by many here, that before the mines came, children did not crawl around in the dirt and die. He might be dismissed as an illiterate, grieving relative of a crippled boy or a dead girl, except that outsiders, including the Jharkhand High Court and the environmental activist group, suggest he may be right. Well, anyhow, it goes on and on. Now, the only thing they're going to take uranium out of the ground for is to fuel these god-awful nuclear plants and weapons. Just like before the First World War started, there in Oklahoma, I pointed out, I think I sent it out, where we had this, I think it was nickel mine and lead mine. In World War I, they needed all kinds more weapons than bullets, right? So they mined the shit out of this area in Oklahoma. And they stacked it up to where it's hundreds of feet high, like mountains of this toxic crap that they took out of the ground and killed the town. People can't live in a town. It's a ghost town. Just so we could have plenty of weapons to kill white people in Europe. So U.S. forces could have plenty of ammunition to murder Germans, and the Germans, I don't know where they were getting there, to murder Frenchmen. British to kill both of them. You see the interconnection? You see linkage? There's always linkage. Always linkage. Now, a lot of this is the stupidity of people in these countries that have fallen under the mental control of the international corporation to make it big and make it rich. And so India can have an atomic bomb. You know, India really needs an atomic bomb. I mean, they got people living in, like you say, their mud huts and barefooted, starving to death all over India. One of the most populous country, I think, in the world. But they got to have atomic bombs. Oh boy. Oh boy. Well, I see on the internet more and more we're fighting racism. Racism in this country, racism in that country, racism in football, racism in the movies, racism on the radio, racism everywhere. Usually they don't accurately describe racism or the different forms of racism, but they go on and on and on. But the more they talk about it, the more there is, the more they discover, because they need racism now, that their type of racism, because they don't have anti-communism anymore. Of course, anti-terrorism was big for a while and still sort of big, but they got racism. Well, they're never going to defeat what we call racism, or even half-ass racism. So what better thing to rally the forces around the flag is we got to fight racism. Where is it? Oh, me? Oh, not me. Some of my best customers are niggers. Oh, what do you mean? I mean African Americans. Yeah. Now remember, if you take care of your own, that's racism right there. Just a simple thing, you know. Here's a little note I picked up on the internet among the thousands that are on there. This past Sunday morning, I offered a teaching in our small 8-day faith community church. We're a lay-led church and take turns preaching or teaching Christ's insanity. I spoke about racism. It's not that racism in the usual sense runs rampant through the church. Quite opposite. Most of us have worked for many years in nonprofits that have served impoverished Negro Americans within Washington's inner city. And many of those nonprofits were founded by members of our community. But like all white institutions in the United States, racism permeates our structures, while our unconscious prejudices make change difficult. During the past year or two, a number of us from the community have participated in anti-racism training and have become quite sensitized to the nature of American racism, both personally and in our institutions. We find it everywhere, including Eighth Day, my church. About 10% of our 50-member worshiping community are Negro Americans, but our leadership is completely white and over 50, and our style of worship is largely white. We don't even have a witch doctor, or we have no beads. Except for the singing, which has changed dramatically in the past several years, in part as a response to our increasing exposure to Negro American worship, and in part because it's just so much more lively and fun. As we have struggled with the issue of racism, there have been conflicts within the community that have become heated, and in my opinion have been created by some potentially serious divisions. On the other hand, I believe that many of these divisions are less real than they appear, and mostly due to different understandings of the meaning of some words we use. It's not that they aren't important disagreements among us, but we've allowed these disagreements to divide us rather than help us understand one another and learn from each other and get together and be all mixed up. So my intent in teaching was to try to heal some of the division by sharing my perception. And she goes on and on and on and on about racism and what we got to do to eliminate it. Yeah. Okay. Good luck. You know, I wish they were right. They see racism around every corner. Everywhere they look, there's racism. I mean, I wish it was right. Too bad it isn't. Too bad it's a sort of a phony form of racism that makes plausible, deniable, possible, which they all do. So they make Tommy the Sin Eater. I'm the Sin Eater, man. That's it for today. I'll be back with you tomorrow on Freya's Day, Ladies Day, She-Wolf Day in the Bunker, 14-5, and shut up.
Come on, bad news. Well, bad news travels like wildfire. Good news travels slow. They all call me wildfire, 'cause everybody knows I'm bad news. Everywhere I go, always getting in trouble, and I'm leaving little girls that hate to see me go. They tried to hang me in Oakland, and they did in Francisco, but I wouldn't choke. I broke the rope, and they had to let me go, 'cause I'm bad news. Everywhere I go, always getting in trouble, and leaving little girls that hate to see me go. Now, from north to south, to east to west, the story is the same. From one state to another, I have to change my name, 'cause I'm bad news. Everywhere I go, always getting in trouble, and I'm leaving little girls that show hate to see me go. Well, now I picked peaches in Georgia, I lumberjacked in Maine. I've been fired, and jailed, any town you can name, 'cause I'm bad news. Everywhere I go, always getting into trouble, and I'm leaving little girls that hate to see me go. Say, baby.